White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. This is White Aryan Resistance Radio calling, and this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, in the bunker right here in North Central Indiana, right by Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station. That's right next to our Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard. And we're closed for the winter now, but you come next spring, bring your 18-wheelers down here, and you can get any goddamn wild-ass weapon you want, but it's got to be big. We don't sell the little stuff. Well, guess what? Today we have an old friend. Used to know him as Clark Kent.
Yes, you
but
did.
I think he put his Superman uniform away, though, and he's going by Bruce Forrester Jr.
That's Bruce M. Forrester Jr.
You're correct. I would like for you to start telling me about, now, last April, you went to this, energy conference in Arkansas, and I've been wanting to talk to you ever since.
Well, good, good, good.
So what happened down there?
In Arkansas, that one I don't quite remember. Maybe that was the Dolores Cannon Ozark Mountain UFO Conference, but that was near the Arkansas border, all the way in western Missouri near Tulsa. But anyway, I did get back from several this year, all about homemade electricity, which is the next best thing to building flying saucers, if you ask me.
Cool.
Yeah, real cool.
Well, let's give it to me, man.
Well, I'll give it to you, but first let me back up a little bit. I also went to a conference in the month of November in just south of Columbus, Ohio, about the work of Stanley Meyer, who is the hydrogen guy. And he was, some people called him a con man, and we won't go into that, will we, Tom?
No, we won't, because that's an old thing, you know, people always calling each other con men and all that, you know.
But wait, but I'll say this, Tom, you've always been like a father to me, a great white father, and we'll just leave it at that.
Well,
but
thank
anyway,
you.
This conference in New Bremen, Ohio, about the work of Stanley Meyer, it was all about hydrogen and his water-powered car. He may have had something going on, Stanley Meyer. Of course, he keeled over dead there one day in, I think, the early 90s, somewhere there, in a Cracker Barrel, allegedly meeting with investors. And now the whole alternative energy community says, oh, he was poisoned. He was assassinated. I'm not so sure.
That's the right wing. Usually a lot of right-wing people are conservative, let's say that. And when anything like that happens, it's always a big plot.
Yeah, so this guy, Stanley Meyer, he was real fond of patents, lots of patents. Patents mostly for automobile retrofit upgrades, manifolds and hydrogen injectors, and ways to introduce hydrogen into the normal gasoline fuel supply. And I think he was on the mark there with his manifolds and injectors. But for the basic patent of how to break the molecular bonds of water to make water break down into hydrogen and oxygen, I don't think he had a horse in the barn.
My father was an engineer out in California at Caltech.
Yeah.
And he was working on some of that kind of stuff, that hydrogen to burning water in a car, too. And I don't remember exactly what came out of it or what he found out, but I know he was playing around with it. I know he built himself an electric car. He took one
great
of those Italian, what was that little sports car from the 60s?
Alfa Romeo.
Yeah, no, not Alfa Romeo. No, this was a Volkswagen.
Oh, Carmen Ghia.
Yeah, he took a Carmen Ghia and turned it into an electric car.
Good for him. I thought you was raised up in Indiana, but your dad was at Caltech, Polytech out there in California?
That's my real father.
Oh, yeah. How many fathers you got, anyway?
I need as many as I get. But my birth father was Linton, as I thought I told you that.
Never.
L-I-N-T-O-N is my birth name. Metzger was my stepfather's name.
Oh.
And so I was raised by my stepfather here in Indiana.
Well, I'm glad you're using this opportunity, Tom, to come out.
Well, I've told people that for a long time, many, many years, actually. I guess some word just didn't get around to some people.
Well, back to our friend Stanley Meyer. So I don't think he had it figured out how to break the molecular bonds of water and liberate hydrogen other than conventional electrolysis. But he did make many patents on manifolds and injectors and other retrofitting automotive systems to use hydrogen to make his dune buggy run around. And so that's where that one stands right now. It's a fruitful area for further research, obviously, because we're sitting with all the water on this ocean planet on an unlimited amount of hydrogen. But I digress a little bit. That's not what I'm specializing in.
Well, wait a minute. Before you go on, did he ever get a working model going?
Oh, yeah. He had this dune buggy, the water-powered car. And he could cruise it down the road, you know, reasonably so. And but no one's, he never would disclose how he was able to break the molecular bonds of water.
So he didn't patent that, huh?
Oh, he patented everything, but his patents are indecipherable, and no one's been able to replicate that, though many folks at this conference in Bremen, Ohio, just south of Groveport, where his home base was, no one's been able come close to replicate how he did it. Allegedly, it was high voltage and low current. Conventional electrolysis is high current and low voltage, perhaps by some kind of resonance. But I'm not an expert on Stanley Meyer, but that's one of the more recent conferences I have attended.
Well, why don't we just go to the old Stanley steamer model and build a steam car?
Well, steam cars work. You know, there's a nice hotel out in Colorado called the Stanley, built by the Stanley Steamer family, and it's a real nice place.
Well, Barney Oldfield broke the track record at Indianapolis way back in 1915 or something with a Stanley Steamer.
Heck yeah, that steam is, you know, railroads. World War II was fought with steam engines.
Yes.
Railroads, they weren't good.
Well, has anybody got one running around? I mean, you know, it seemed to me that there'd be people building them.
Well, there may be, but that's not my particular area of expertise, steam power. And my shtick, if you will, is the white race revolution, flying saucer style. We've talked about this a bit before. The flying saucer folks, some of them are called blondes or Aryans from space. Well, it'd be nice to kind of build the flying saucer and get all that going on, but that's a little grandiose even for me. So as perhaps a more achievable goal is to make some homemade electricity using an intermediate step of some of this flying saucer technology just to generate electricity. But that brings up a question. What the heck is electricity? Don't ask me because I don't know. And I don't think other people know as well. But we're able to make it and use it by conventional, moving a coil of wire through magnetic fields. But it's kind of a loser's game because it's coal or it's oil or it's nuclear power. But there is an unlimited amount of this electricity from the various, Tesla called it, the wheel work.
I see they've got the museum going up there in New York City.
Good.
The Tesla. They were raising money for it for several years, and now they're putting the tower back up that Tesla had.
That would be quite a feat out on Morgan Cliff Tower out on Long Island.
He has a large following and a lot of people involved now, I guess, and so they're probably trying to dig into his patents and stuff and see what they can do.
Well, he's a good Serbian and a white man, of course. Serbia is white. Most all of Europe is white, despite the, including the Russians and that great white hope,
of course,
Vladimir Putin.
Of course. Probably the last large centralization of whites in the world is in Russia.
Indeed, indeed. There's about 200 million whites in North America, but there's a lot of the colored boys, as we know.
Well, there's a lot of really faint colored mulattoes, too, that you got to look close, especially with the women, because they're using those people. Now, you know, I think that's the Jews' secret weapon was to develop a mulatto race that the white race was more likely to accept.
Indeed, Ben Klassen, remember our old friend Ben Klassen, the Church of the Creator guy with Nature's Eternal Religion, he was warning about mongrelization quite some time ago.
Well, go back to Senator Bilbo way back in the 30s that was screaming about it in the floor of Congress. We're going to bastardize the race. I mean, that's back when they get right up in Congress and talk about it. At least a few did. Bilbo was an outspoken person on the race issue.
Fascinating. So, Tom, what have you been doing just lately since we talked last?
Well, I haven't done anything spectacular except doing the radio show 6 days a week.
Hey, that's real good.
And I do quite a bit of research on that. And I read books and try to store up my knowledge until a shooting war starts. There's not much else I can do but prepare with knowledge, you know.
Indeed, indeed, knowledge. So this, back to this little phrase I coined myself, the white race revolution, flying saucer style. And it kind of began for me to try to figure out the different breeds, if you will, of the occupants of flying saucers, having for a long time been a flying saucer guy. And so once upon a time when I was out there in Berkeley, California, I decided I would investigate this using the hermetic principle. You know, as above, so below. I thought I could study and learn about the races up there by looking at the races down here.
Okay.
And so I looked at the only source of information about race that wouldn't be contaminated, you know, by all that civil rights stuff and, you know, Jesse Owens from The Ohio State University. I wanted to find some kind of racial material. I looked in Soldier of Fortune magazine way back in 1980, and sure enough, there was a little ad, a little advertisement for the Assateru Free Assembly. We're having their conference right next door in Oakland. So I showed up on the appointed day, and there's a great big colorful tent with Nordic heraldry on, you know, like a colorful tent. I've never seen anything like that. That was Steve McNallan who was putting on the Assateru.
Yes, I'm familiar with those, and I'm familiar with Steve. I met him years ago. We had a, there was an Odinist gathering up in the mountains in San Diego County.
Yeah.
And Steve was there.
And so as I was, you know, checking things out, I there was a book that was going around that was really the hot stuff. You know, the conference was fun. There was, you know, mead and a potluck and a pig roast and all that. But the really hot thing was this book by this guy, Ben Klassen, called The White Man's Bible. It was the second of a two-book series. The first was Nature's Eternal Religion.
What year was that?
Well, the book came out, I think the White Man's Bible had just come out. This was in like the summer of 1980, going way back. And
well, that came out. It came out in the 70s.
Well, that's about right. Well, this is the first that I ran into.
Well, I was in San Diego, and there was a National Socialist meeting. They invited me to it in San Diego, and I went there, and they had these books by Klassen, and I'd never heard of them before. And I took them home and started. Then I started sending them out to people. But that was in the early 70s, I think.
Your memory is obviously better than mine.
Well, anyhow, I don't think you have to worry about looking for trying to figure out these beings, if there's such a thing. That are hovering around, they don't have to land because they're already here. As far as I'm concerned, the Aryan white race did not originate here.
I could not agree more. You are correct, sir.
In fact, I think Orion is the most likely spot that they came from. At least that's the way.
It's hard to say just what planet, because we think in terms of physical dimensions. There's a little bit of interdimensional context to the flying saucer phenomenon, which generally confounds us.
Oh. Well, you're aware that, I think we talked about it last time, about those pyramids that are laid out to line up with the constellation of Orion.
I'm not a pyramid expert, but I did see a little presentation on the Bosnia pyramids over in Eastern Europe. They're quite something. And, yeah, pyramids. Tell me more.
Well, if you go to see the pinpoints of Orion in the sky, and then every so many years go by and they line up perfectly with the pyramids and the way they're laid out. I mean, the story that was presented to me certainly made me pretty much a believer that there's something going on there. And I will never accept that the white Aryan evolved from the nigger.
That's the rage of the kind of conventional evolution model. We all came from Africa, and the Negro this and the Negro that, and gee whiz, heck no. So the creation story does have some validity in that regard.
Yeah, the trouble is we've destroyed more of our ancient history than anything else. We've been spending our time, the Christians, wiping out the libraries of Alexandria, even up until just not so long ago when we went into the museum in Iraq that had tremendous information, items in there from back in the Aryan days of Mesopotamia, and just people stole them, and the soldiers walked out with the stuff. I don't think they got it all back either.
I think some of it wound up in the black market in Israel, but that's just the material I pick up on the internet.
Is that like the swastika stuff they sell at the flea market in Israel? You can buy all kinds of swastika stuff at the Israeli...
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, flea markets.
So there I was, way back in Berkeley, reading this book, Nature's Eternal Religion. Man, it really struck a chord. I never really intended to become a racist, but I did, because I discovered it within myself, lurking dormant all those years.
Those two books are all you really need. I mean, there's a lot of other good books, but. Those two books are all you need to have the right frame of mind.
So I was recently at a conference called Stormfront down near Knoxville way in eastern Tennessee. That was a lot of fun. And your name was bandied about just a bit, and a young man named Mr. Truck, I think his was, talked about what do you do when people ask you, are you a racist? And he was talking about white genocide and this and that. But I come up since later with a better answer, and they say, Bruce, are you a racist? And I say, I try to be.
Yeah, I love it when they ask me that. I just smile and say, of course I'm a racist. Aren't you?
Well, gee whiz, So anyway, I was writing this little diatribe about the white race revolution, flying saucer style, and then using the hermetic principle to learn about the races down here on Earth so as to extrapolate about the races upstairs. And the first thing I noticed was the Negroes. And Negroes essentially cannot help it. I mean, they were out of the jungle just a few centuries ago and sort of harbor a racial memories of sharpening their teeth and biting each other in a cannibalism rage.
Well, it's almost like that these liberals should be turned into the SPCA, that it's cruelty to animals the way they play these Negroes around.
And if Negroes cannot help it, in my opinion, the Jew does it on purpose. Parasitic behavior. Living upon the symbiotic host of the white race. Sort of like dogs have fleas, America has Jews.
Well, that's right. And, you know, they talked about in Germany keeping a few for a museum or something. But I think that, where was I? I lost it. Go ahead.
Well, we're talking about various races and using the hermetic principle and kind of a little bit about creation versus evolutionism. And of course, creation just gets you a har-har and, you know, from the snickering from the New York Times and things like that. But I don't know if that evolution really explains the origins of of Aryans on Earth.
Well, what I think is it's two things. Evolution explains the Negro evolution as an animal, and the other is that they come from someplace else.
Hmm.
I mean, you can't. You know, what other answer do you have? I mean, this Christian creationism is bunk, as far as I'm concerned.
The story of Adam and Eve. It's a little bit too much, too lightweight for me. But so about this flying saucer thing, I'll return to that again and again. So the advent of flying saucers supersedes the authority of Christianity, because according to the Bible and this and that, the Jews are this and Jesus is the Son of God and the Jews are the chosen people, and that's a strongly held emotional belief, and it's going to take a lot to break that up a little bit.
Well, thousands and thousands of people are leaving Christianity every year. In fact, Europe is, I don't think it'll be too many more decades till it's gone, other than, the buildings will still be around, but, or it'll be totally Islamic.
Yeah. There is, however, an irony, and I've noticed this, within certainly North America, in my opinion, Tom, that the best elements of the white race tend to be fundamental Christians. The best racial elements of our people are Christians. And, of course, I'll use the example of Tim Tebow. What a stud, man. What a stud. White guy playing football with the best of them. How many Heisman Trophy? 2 national championships. He was not a drop-back passer, so he didn't quite fit in the NFL. The white Christians do not have abortions. The white Christians do not engage in interracial sodomy. And I could just go on and on and on. So it's a paradox. Any comments there?
Well, Mormonism is one of the key ones that used to be more promoting white race. They went to hell a few decades ago when the head of the church had a vision that now we got to let blacks into the priesthood and so forth, but I think that the reason is because the hardcore religionists, especially the Protestants, are out more in the outer country, in the farmlands of the country, in the places where Judaized New York civilization is not really preponderant or hasn't been. So being raised in this somewhat of a, it is a cult situation, it's a byproduct that they are more white. It's not the plan to be white, it's the byproduct.
Fascinating. So it's the natural demographics tends to favor a rural, more close to the land type population where our traditional values are stronger, whereas the cosmopolitan business of Philadelphia and Washington, D.C., kind of things break down and ferment and become rancid more quickly.
Well, to prove that is the fact that Obama and the Jews and the boys are hell-bent to move the blacks out of the urban areas into the more white areas. Every little town now, they're pushing them in and getting them good jobs and getting them into schools, and pretty soon, you put two races side by side together, and they're going to mix. There's no way of stopping it other than by dictatorship, and even then, probably wouldn't stop. You have to have geographical separation of a large amount of miles in between. You can't have... I pushed racial separation for a long time, but now I'm going back to white supremacy because it's the only weapon we've got left. Even if there's not too many of us, we'll either absolutely, the white race will have a resurgence and rule this world and get rid of all the crummy, no good white race or white people, or we're not going to get anywhere because this will just gradually sink into the muck.
Well, there's much truth there, much truth. I don't have my personal self, Tom, I don't have a quick or easy solution, but the path I have chosen is to develop myself some of this flying saucer technology so as to focus attention on the UFO blondes or the Nordics or the Pleiadians or the, as you point out, the Orion folks, as a generic term, the Aryans from space. And that's what I'm up to, making a rig of homemade electricity.
Well, that's good, but one thing that bothers me is that I can't go swinging all the way over to that side either on the flying saucer thing, because I am convinced that if there were flying saucers with aliens in it, they would have landed a long time ago and not be out in the woods someplace. They would just come down and talk to people.
Perhaps they have, often telepathically. That seems to be the way they do business. There's another development in the mid-1940s, we start popping off nuclear bombs, which has a very negative effect that we're not even fully aware of. And so they may be, some of them, coming here in a manner similar to buzzards or fleas or lice or possums or something or other, looking for a free lunch as we start to kill ourselves off. They're coming around here as the cleanup crew. That's the way things work in nature, and we live under nature's eternal religion, whether we know it or even like it or not.
Well, that's true. It's the laws of nature are, if you want to have a God, it's nature.
It sure is.
Yes. Well, I just say that I think lots of people out there have made a fortune off flying saucers.
And who has made a fortune?
The people that write all the books and make the movies, you know.
Well, that's true. They do make a few movies.
Well, a few of them. Have you seen the theaters nowadays? There's usually two or three a month in the theater about space travel and all that stuff. And
amen.
And on television, they've got hundreds of them, you know. They've got one big one, big blockbuster in the theater now, and I forget what the name is. And so anyhow, there are certain business elements that are also promoting this just to make money.
Well, there's nothing wrong with creating wealth, because that's it's like the farmer plants corn and he gets a 200 to 300 return, 200 to 1, 300 to 1, especially if it's heirloom organic corn.
Well, my position on that is how they make their wealth. You know, white people who become wealthy on their own, developing something, inventing something, and developing it and selling it, I have no problem whatsoever. That's very good.
Well, Steve Jobs, and I'll certainly say, even though he was adopted and this and that, he looks pretty white to me, and he gave us the iPhone, and those iPhones now have cameras in them. And a lot of people, whether it's a Samsung or a Droid or what have you, they got a pretty good camera in them. And so everybody's out there now. They see something in the sky, they can whip out their phone and film it. Thus, there's many, many films of UFOs. And they're not all fake now. There's quite a few.
Well, I watch those programs when they come around, because I'm definitely always been interested in it. I was a supporter of Major Keyhoe back in the late 50s when I was in high school. I was writing letters to Major Keyhoe and Operation Blue Book. And I was into it way back there. I worked with a guy who was really a fanatic on it.
And who was that?
Who the guy I worked with?
Yeah.
His name was Bert Ferguson. He wasn't anybody of any notability, but he said, "Tommy, they're not coming. They're here." Mm-hmm. And that's what he always used to say to me. And of course, he didn't have any actual proof, but he felt they were already here and they were in the government and all over the place, which if you wanted to destroy the people on Earth, that would be the place to get into, and it surely looks like they're trying to destroy the Earth.
Well, it's hard to say. We're doing a kind of a good job already destroying it ourselves, especially any kind of nuclear activity, more dangerous than we really understand.
Well, you know, you mentioned the bomb, which is the Jew bomb, you know, the hydrogen and the regular atomic bombs, all developed by Jews.
This is true.
You know, the rumor now is, and some of the things I've seen on the History Channel, is that Hitler was attempting to build an atomic bomb, but he gave it up because of the consequences he felt it would bring. That they found manufacturing works that they pretty sure that he was working on this atomic bomb, but all of a sudden it was abandoned. Not at the end of the war, but while the war was going on, they abandoned it, which leads me to believe that the horrible Hitler wasn't so horrible after all, that he just decided that that was not a weapon to use.
Well, the United States has used the atomic bomb, and now we threaten it constantly, as you well know.
Oh, yeah.
So this nuclear activity, according to Wilhelm Reich, M.D., who discovered orgone energy, he did this Orner experiment. Life energy seems to be allergic to radioactivity. And another guy named Walter Russell, his last book was called Atomic Suicide. So any amount of radiation is pretty gosh darn harmful. And the flying saucer people themselves have warned us openly, knock it off with these UFOs. I mean, correction, knock it off with atomic energy. It's a bad, and we're on a one-way trip down to death from this.
Well, I agree. This atomic energy and all this, these nuclear plants are suicide. I mean,
as
global cooling or global warming or global change or whatever you want to call it, there are going to be a lot more earthquakes, and now they're going to cause them artificially by these fracking wells all over the place.
This is also true for short-term increase in hydrocarbon production. We're paying a little price of earthquakes and groundwater pollution. I couldn't agree more.
Do you know that they spend more money getting it out, fracking, than they make on it?
Yeah, especially with this business about trying to drive down the price of oil with OPEC and all that to put pressure on the ruble over in Russia. It's kind of backfiring against our domestic shale fracking industry, too.
Well, these guys go out and put down a well, and then they borrow all kinds of money, and then when it comes up a dust hole, they just leave everything there and walk off, and they go bankrupt and like that, but they've already made the money. It's this total scam. Fracking is a total scam.
So, Tom, I had a smart guy tell me once that for the white people, our most dangerous enemy is actually ourselves.
Well, I've said that many times.
And you're the man I'm referring to, sort of a mentor or a father to me, Tom, a great white father. Your name is
Ugh.
The great white father.
Ugh.
I'm sorry, but that's your stuff. Okay. So,
well, what about, wait a minute. Now, don't you think that we got off on the wrong track when we even called these things flying saucers? We should never, because that's sort of made it sort of a tongue-in-cheek thing from the very beginning, instead of making it absolutely sure to call it unidentified flying objects.
Well, the original term was flying saucer, but then Captain Edward J. Ruppelt decided to change it to unidentified flying objects to make it a little more scientific. Then they could say, well, it's unidentified, and just with a little more investigation and more data, we could provide an explanation. But they sure look like flying saucers to me.
Well, but the point is, it sort of trivializes the situation, and they use it to degrade people who have seen unidentified flying objects. That you believe in the flying saucers. You believe in the flying saucers, you know.
I do believe in flying saucers.
Well, I know what you mean, but what I'm saying is the terminology was chosen badly, and I think the press chose the terminology instead of unidentified flying objects.
Well, both terms are in the current idiom right now, the current, you know, current vernacular. So when you say flying saucer, people pretty much know what we're talking about. Also, UFO, they're both valid.
Yeah, I know, but it's a fine point, but I think there would be a lot more people admit to believing in it if it was that terminology was used instead of flying saucer, because people have been degraded and insulted and commercial pilots.
There's a plug for an organization called the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON. They have a monthly journal, and if the website is simply MUFON.com, and that monthly journal is pretty good. It's hard copy, and it's pretty darn good. They have new cases every month. And, of course, on the Internet, on the YouTube channel, man, just Google up UFO YouTube, and you can never watch the same video twice. There's that many being posted constantly because everybody carries around a smartphone. They see something, they film it. And there's just hundreds, if not thousands, of new postings every month.
I wonder why so many of them come from South America.
Well, it's a big world now.
Well, I see, you know, there's that one guy from down there that makes a lot of videos. I forget his name.
Jaime Musson.
Yeah, right. And so, but out of Brazil and Colombia and all down through there, seems like that's where we're getting a preponderance of information on sightings.
Well, there are a lot of sightings here and there. Speaking of sightings, let's return just a bit to crop circles, which more or less are out of southern England, not too far from Stonehenge. And I know some people like Jeffrey Wilson of the down here in Cincinnati, Ohio, the International Crop Circle Researchers Association. He has decided that most of the English sightings are hoaxes. I tend to disagree. In my opinion, the crop circles are schematics of various flying saucer motors and free energy devices. They're schematics of how nature works, especially magnetism and electricity. In my studies of homemade electricity, I don't know what electricity is, and I sure don't know what magnetism is. So let's talk about magnetism.
Well, wait a minute. About this crop circle, though. I mean, it shouldn't be that hard to define whether it's fraud or not, because there are obviously many ways you could put security detectors and all that kind of stuff around a field. And if it's an area where there's a lot of these crop circles happening, they could set up electronic detection stuff and video cameras and everything else to where nothing could come into that field without being videotaped or something.
That is correct. That is correct.
Well, then, if that's the case, you'd think the hoaxer, or the people who want to say it's a hoax, that's what they would do to show for sure that it's either true or false.
Well, gee whiz.
Well, I mean, everybody's talking about it. I mean, I've seen hundreds of pictures of them. They certainly look to me like no guy on the ground could be doing that good a job, and how could they sneak around and do all this stuff at night and or whenever and get away with it? But on the other hand, I like to have substantial evidence, not just stuff that looks like it's true.
Well, that brings up the question of proof, and a lot of MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, is kind of guilty in that regard, focusing more on the proof than what the saucers are up to. Also, crop circle researchers, they're so darn concerned about proof, they're missing what the circles mean, these formations. What do the formations represent? And I have seen evidence recently that these crop circle formations are illustrations of magnetism and how galaxies work and how electricity behaves and methods for generating.
But if they are, I would say that they're so far ahead that we, at our state of science, we can't understand it.
Well, perhaps they are somewhat more advanced. But remember, we're white people too, you know.
Well, yeah, but something that is there now, and if some advanced civilization's doing it, we, no matter how smart white people are, it would take us a long time to catch up to figure these things out, how to read these and exactly what
they
do.
It depends what course, Ben Classen talked about salubrious living. There's also eugenics or salubrious breeding. We certainly have it within ourselves to lift ourselves up by our own bootstraps, by eugenics, and cull in the herd for the hunchbacks and the hair lips and things like that. And, of course, leave the Michael Brown and Trayvon Martin strains completely out of it. But that's not the popular New York influence that we're bombarded with.
Well, now, with these, you remember these triangular-shaped ships they've seen? Now,
yeah.
The one that went over Phoenix, that was, everybody saw that.
Well, sure.
Now, how much of this is stuff that the government has and has built, no matter where they got the information, and how much of it is not? I mean,
it's hard to say what the United States government's doing. They're not talking, by and large. They ridicule and do this and that, and they refer us to the 1968 Project Blue Book report headed by that guy Edward Condon out of Colorado. So they're saying, oh, we're out of the flying saucer business, but not
wait too a minute, many. Wait a minute. The Blue Book was put out by Major Kehoe. He was from Illinois, I'm pretty sure.
That he was a little bit earlier, that is correct.
And well, then I don't know who put out the Blue Book. I thought it was him. But anyhow,
well,
go ahead.
He was in NICAP, National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, and McDonald Kehoe. But the government thing, Project Blue Book, finally a guy named Condon, C-O-N-D-O-N, from the University of Colorado in 1968 was their official report, which said, as a great synopsis, maybe a few unexplained sightings, but by and large this phenomenon represents no threat to national security, so let's just forget it.
Well, wait a minute. This big triangular-looking craft that was at least hundreds of feet across that flew over Phoenix where hundreds of people saw it.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't get a congressman or a senator to dig in there? You see, we've had presidents even wanted to get that information, and they couldn't get it. I know Jimmy Carter wanted to get in there and get it. And then Clinton was going to get into it. It always falls on its face.
It's a pretty big subject, Tom, as you know, because it supersedes the authority of the Bible. With flying saucers, suddenly it's not our religion that counts anymore. It's their religion as an historical analogy. When Jacques Cartier showed up in Canada in about 1542, the Iroquois and the Hurons, basically the Iroquois, they ran the show. But when the French showed up, it was the French. And to get guns and other things, steel traps and steel axes and the white man's goods, the accompanying Jesuit said, you want guns, you get baptized, and then we'll give you guns. And so that's the way that deal went down. And that's the nearest historical analogy. We're the Indians. And the flying saucers have come to us, so our religion is no longer primary. Our Bible is now secondary.
Well, it seems to me that if thousands, millions of people started demanding to know exactly what that craft was that flew over Phoenix, just concentrate on one situation that hundreds of people saw, and even the governor admitted seeing it, and the whole bit, that, just concentrating all their energy on that, we want to know what it was, because they got all kinds of weapons of war. They don't really have to have this giant, three-pointed craft that's like size of a football field. I mean, you see, that just shows you the military-industrial complex runs the country. And along
that's what Eisenhower said. He said that way back in 1960. Gee whiz.
I thought it was even a little before that, but maybe
yeah,
not.
Yeah, I think it was his farewell address. Kennedy had already been elected, and then so Dwight Eisenhower gave his farewell address, what was it, maybe January of 1960. The inauguration was on January the 20th. Late 1960. He was inaugurated in 1961.
Well, I believe the three worst groups in this country, the military-industrial complex, the State Department, and the banking system in Wall Street, those three are the worst on-the-ground problems that we got.
Interesting movie that you mentioned, that a guy named Gamble, like Procter & Gamble. This is Foster Gamble, a grandson of the Gamble fortune, put out a movie about a year or two ago called Thrive. And it's pretty good.
I see.
I trust you've seen it or downloaded it.
I might have seen it.
It's pretty good. It didn't really show in theaters. It was an internet thing, but you can send away for it and get a CD. It's quite good. About the suppression of free energy and the banking cartel as well. Without mentioning Jews or anti-Semitism, and not particularly mentioning race. Unfortunately, it's a little bit one world.
You can't. You see, that's the problem. The right wing don't understand that. The right wing conservatives, they only see it one way. And if there's anything else they don't agree with, they throw the whole thing out. That's what I refuse to do. Hmm. Just because some guy is a left-wing liberal, I'm going to listen to what he's got to say, and I'll keep what is, I believe, correct and throw the rest out. But the conservatives tend not to do that. They say, oh, he's this or he's that or he's a left-winger. I'm not going to listen to anything he says. Well, that's ridiculous.
Hmm. Well, good thing we have Tom Metzger on the job, is all I can say.
Yeah, the dirty little Bolshevik.
So, moving right along to some homemade electricity as to conjure up this white race revolution, flying saucer style. The flying saucer style might be to tap in to some of this free energy, and I would suggest looking at the works of Henry Moray, M-O-R-A-Y, who in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s was successful, in my opinion, he was successful, tuning in electricity from the atmosphere, and perhaps even more fundamental from the atmosphere, from what Nikola Tesla called the wheel work of nature, or the force, or from the creator herself.
Why isn't anybody recreating on a smaller model Tesla's experiments?
Well, they are. They are every day in every way. Check out YouTube and Nikola Tesla, and there'll be so many that you can never watch them because they're being posted faster than you can look at them.
Well, have they demonstrated the transmission of power through the air like Tesla talked about?
I can't give you a definite affirmative answer with a quote to a URL to who has done it. John Bedini and Peter Lindemann, maybe they don't want their name mentioned on your show. Unfortunately, they're, especially that Lindemann, instead of building hardware, they're mostly selling books.
Yeah. See, this is a problem where you got the religious problem, the Christian problem, Jew problem, Islamic problem. Then you got the capitalist predators problem. And then you got megalomaniacs and nuts, and it's hard to get the rendered down truth on about anything.
Another fruitful area for further research is into the fundamental nature of magnetism. We don't really know what magnetism is, but Edward Leed Skalman, that's spelled L-E-E-D-S-K-A-L-N-I-N. Edward Leed Skalman wrote Magnetic Current, about the nature of magnetism. And another guy who did real good on the magnetism is Howard Johnson, like the restaurant, Howard Johnson. He wrote a book called The Secret World of Magnets. And when you download that, put a minus for motors, because he also built a motor. And so a lot of people are out there selling plans for his stupid motor. That is not near as important about the nature of magnetism. And we remember the iron filings over a bar magnet and the characteristic field that it purports to show. But that's not really correct, Tom. And here's why. In the bar magnet, each little bit of iron filing itself becomes a magnet. So the field shape is not a representation of the magnetic field, nor is the Earth a correct representation of the magnetic field itself. There's something in the middle called the Bloch wall, B-L-O-C-H, Bloch wall, where the fields come out of the poles and go into the equator and then change directions in their spiral vortex motion. So a lot of fundamental research on magnetic fields, and in that regard, it leads to perhaps the most important and fundamental of all, white man Walter Russell. Heck yeah. And the world just goes on and on there. FreeEnergyAndFreeThinking.com by Matt Presti is very good YouTube videos explaining the work of Walter Russell. And so that's where I'm at. I'm also building stuff, and I'm not soliciting investors because, unlike our friend Stanley Meyer, the hydrogen guy, Forrester does not have a horse in the barn. It would be fraud if I accepted anybody's money because I don't have the gadget. I figure that if I get a gadget, I've already got funding lined up, but I've got to.
Yeah.
The specific demonstration which I've been challenged is to take an electric coffee pot, hook it up to my free energy gadget, and make and serve hot coffee. I do that, and the money spigots open for me.
You know, last time we talked, I mentioned, I believe, this generator that I saw briefly that has been invented and, I guess, produced over in Germany, to where you could take this thing, and evidently it wasn't very heavy or very big, and even with a waterfall of 3 inches drop, you could get a lot of power out of it. And I have been looking ever since to get a source to where who's making it and how much they're selling it for and so, because it would be the answer to a tremendous amount of the energy problem, because any place where there's enough water to where you're getting about a 3-4 inch drop or maybe more, you could create your own power.
Fascinating. That reminds me of Victor Schauberger, the Austrian forester. You know, the guy, like a Jaeger, guy who worked in the woods back in the 20s and 30s, the living properties of water. Fascinating material, Schauberger.
Well, keep digging and see what you can find out about that generator.
Will do.
You know, I told our listeners a couple of days ago that I was listening to some radio research on, they were doing an expose of Les Paul and Mary Ford and their music. Hmm. And, I listen to a lot of things, and you just have to wait, and you get one little great thing out of a two-hour interview, and it takes a lot of time. Well, anyhow, Les Paul was playing these clubs with his music, and a guy came up and was trying to get his attention to talk to him, and finally he said, "Do you want to talk to me?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "I think I've got something you'd like to see." He said, "Come on out here in the parking lot," and he opened up the trunk of his car, and there was a tape recorder. And
wow.
He said, "What's this?" And the guy says, "It's a tape recorder." See, all we had here in the United States was wire recorders.
Huh.
And so he said, "Man, I got to get this." Well, him and Bing Crosby got together. This colonel had brought these back from Germany, dismantled them, and brought them back from Germany at the end of the war. And they put them back together, and that was the start of that great music, Les Paul, Mary Ford.
Indeed.
And also it led to a tremendous amount of change in the music industry, along with rock and roll. So the rock and rollers can thank Nazi Germany.
Well, amen. And Heil Hitler, what can I say?
Well, the amazing stuff that they were building over there in Germany was so far advanced of what we're doing here. It's ridiculous,
Yeah. Well, you remember, Tom Metzger, that you are a credit to your race.
Well, I hope so.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
Despite what so-and-so may say about you, Bruce M. Forrester Jr. says you're the best.
Well, I think people should judge me by my enemies.
Well, there could be some ballot.
Yeah, because I don't answer most of the time the charges, but most of them see me as the old has-been anyhow, so they don't attack me that much. But I'm doing some, I think, very interesting things as far as researching and coming up with things that other people are not doing. And I don't limit myself to one.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll make you a sporting proposition. The next time I'm going to go to one of these free energy shows, how about I holler at you, come get you, and take you with me? You can travel incognito.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Hey, that would be a lot of fun. I'd like that.
I'll wear my rabbi hat, my beanie.
Yeah. You'd make a fine rabbi.
Well, you know, the chief rabbi of Israel was Metzger.
there you have it, Tom. So I'm not the only one working on this free energy thing. And when it comes in, big changes afoot. Oh, yeah.
Well, I hope you succeed. You know, I told you last time, I think a friend of mine went down to Oak Ridge and spent 2 or 3 years trying to get that other form of nuclear energy going that wasn't dirty. What'd they call that?
Perhaps cold fusion?
Yeah. He worked on it for 2 years and left in disgust because the Jews took over the project and he couldn't get anything done, so he gave up and left. But cold fusion, that's another good thing we should be pushing.
There's more than one way to skin a cat, and there's more than one way to do it right.
Well, the problem is you've always got the moneyed class getting in and either destroying the work, destroy the person, or somehow, because they'll say, well, how much money can we make out of it, you know? And if they can't...
Yeah, that's true, but a more important goal would be their survival, expansion, and advancement of nature's finest creation. Who said that? Well, it must be Ben Klassen. But, you know, the Blondes, the Aryans from space, seem to have solved some of that, and they're a role model for us. I mean, they're big, intelligent, and very good-looking, both the men and the women.
Well, now, how many people have described those people as that, these beings? I mean, has it been hundreds or thousands?
Hundreds, thousands of all the sighting. Well, you know, as above, so below, the same proportion of the whites on Earth is maybe 5 to 10 or 11% of Earth's population are Aryan. That seems to be the same percentage up there in space because most of them are the grays or reptilians or various sort of indistinct creatures.
The problem I see it is that just like the Christians, if they say they... I used to run into people, and still do. They say they talk to Jesus. So I had one woman who was working in a hardware store. She used to always say that. And I said, well, when do you talk to Jesus? I talk to him in the morning. I said, what, at breakfast? She said, yeah. I said, well, I want to come over and talk to him, too. Well, it don't work that way. Well, I think that's a lot of the way a lot of people who've turned to unidentified flying objects have allowed themselves to get into making it a religion or a church instead of sticking to the science of it.
The two are, they go together. You cannot have one without the other. Trust me on that. The sacred studies is part of physics, math, and chemistry. That is true now. Religion may not be segregated from science. That's what Bruce M. Forrester Jr. now says from after having partially assimilated the works of Walter Russell. Religion goes with it.
Okay, Professor. Next time you find one that's not too far away, these get-togethers, I want to
go. Hey, Tom, I owe you dinner, you and your beautiful bride. What's her name, Mary?
Mary, yes.
I owe you both a dinner, and the next time there's a free energy show, I'm taking you with me.
Cool. Well, that's about it for today. You know, I've known Bruce for a long time. When was it? Back in the early 80s?
Yeah, back in the Tom Padgett days.
Oh, yeah. Poor old Tom Padgett sort of gone off the reservation.
Well, he got mixed up with Barry Menkow, who's back in prison again, so whatever.
That was funny. People should read that. What was the name of that book they put out on that?
Wonder Boy.
Wonder Boy, because here was a Jew that was running this scam, and he had some of our people working for him.
His best guy was Tom Paget. It wasn't big Tom Paget, he would have never pulled it off.
Yeah, and on the wall behind Paget's office, he had a picture of Hitler hanging. And here was this Jew that was supposed to be the head of it.
So the Wonder Boy went to the federal pen. He got out. He became a Christian preacher.
Right.
He seemed to be doing okay. But then the next thing you know, a lot of the funds are missing from the church.
Well, yeah, they got him twice. I went to a couple of his church meetings and sit right on the front row, and we had a big laugh about that.
So he's back in the penitentiary now.
Yeah, well, you know,
I guess whatever.
He should have walked away from that form of life. But he's a Jew. I mean, criminal Jew, and he's going to do it. That's where.
Well, this is my first observation, Tom, that the Negro can't help it, but the Jew does it on purpose.
Yeah, he loves it. He embraces it. The underworld has always had a large percentage of Jews, and you know, Murder Incorporated, all that kind of stuff. No, they gravitate to it, you know, and then they use other excuses that people are anti-Semitic.
But we have a higher calling, much higher.
You better believe it. So.
Oh yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to be out of here, and thanks.
Thank you, Tom. It's my privilege and to be on your show. I'm honored, sir.
And I'm going to be the first to come over there. You get something going there. I see some saucer hovering around your house. I want to be there.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. Oh, and wait a minute. Give your address.
Oh, well, let's go Post Office Box 55, Bellbrook, Ohio, 45305, or www.zephyrtechnology.com. I better spell it. Zephyr Technology, Z as in zebra, Zephyr, technology.com.
Cool. All right. We'll see you next time.
And Merry Christmas.
And Merry Christmas to you in a pagan sort of way.
Yes, sir.
Well, there he goes. Bruce M. Forrester with the fitting he used to have of Clark Kent way back in. Okay, that's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow on Tears Day. And okay, here's another movie that I think you ought to watch. This is hot. Deadly Code. It's on Netflix. No, it's on Roku. It's on Hulu. I'm sorry, Hulu. Deadly Code with John Malkovich. Actually, the name of the film that I'd like to say first is Rampage, Capital Punishment. Rampage, Capital Punishment. I'll play you a couple outtakes.
You wake up and change. Before I tell you what I think you should do, I want to give you the facts. And I mean it, the facts. The NSA tapes every single phone call, email, and text on Earth. People like Snowden or Assange, who give us much-needed information to protect democracy, get hunted and prosecuted by the U.S. government. The U.S. government is funded by the rich and likes to keep people in the dark, ignorant, and on the brain level of children. They make sure people are busy, making money to survive, to take care of their family, their house, their lawn. They want people thinking they are free and have a choice and to do whatever they want, but they can't. The people that are representing you are bought and paid for to keep you stupid in your small, stupid little world. How can there be no gun control? Even get thrown in jail. Why? Because you are above the law. If you are rich, you watch Spielberg's Lincoln movie and you actually think the Civil War happened to free the slaves, so the billionaire Spielberg makes you even dumber. And they will make sure that that movie will be screened at schools and in TVs nonstop forever. But the reality is that every war was about money, and the stupid people must die because the elite decided it. You sit in front of reality TV every day to kill your time, and you think you are up to date because you watch Anderson Cooper and other empty balloons without their own opinion?
Hey, Duke, how much money you got?
Bingo!
drugs don't matter. This is all created to keep you stupid. The free press, TV, Hollywood movies, schools, universities, and religion are all opium for the masses, as Karl Marx would say.
I want to make you wake up and change.
Reports of a multiple shooting.
I have been consistently the number one anchor in this city for what? 2 years? Jesus.
It's a downward spiral to the end of all times. And there's no chance that we can survive. I mean, 70 million people every year are brought into this earth. What are they doing? Sucking up our resources. There's too many people, so what do? Just keep them around? Let's kill them. Let's get rid of them. Good. Thank you. Thanks for coming out. Why not? I mean, that's my plan. That's what I want to do. Let's just clean the world. So maybe the rest of us can sustain a little bit of life. So maybe that's what I'll do in the future. I'll help you out. I'll help you out. And I will cleanse.
Well, that was a cut from Rampage. Capital Punishment, Made in Canada. I can't believe it. This is the wildest, toughest, killingest movie I've seen in a long time. And the guy speaks our language. Unconventional warfare. One guy takes him on. That's on Hulu. Watch it. Let me know what you think. With a little tiny bit of editing, that would be a perfect propaganda tool. Now in the film Deadly Code, John Malkovich, these are Siberians who have a family organization of outlaws who war against the Soviet system, and then the Soviet system collapses and they carry right on taking on the people who took their place because they were just about as bad. Now, here's a point where he describes who the enemy is.
Must respect all living creatures. Except for the police. People who work in government, bankers, usurers, and anyone who has the power and money to exploit the simple people. Stealing from these people is allowed. But remember, it's crazy to want too much.